Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Good evening. This is the Arsenal Fan Show with myself, Matt Beadle, and the guy from Gunnerstown, Charlie East. It's normally the guys, but it's just you and me today, mate.
Hi, mate. Lone Ranger.
Yeah.
Bank holiday Monday. The other guys got other arrangements.
They have, yeah.
I'm still here.
In the sun. And here we are in a cooped up studio with the aircon on. But good, mate. Don't get too cosy, all right? It's just the two of us. So, okay, you know, there are boundaries.
We've got the table.
But, mate, it's good that you're in fine fettle. You're in good mood because despite the 3-1 defeat at the weekend, the first defeat of the season, you're okay. You're in good spirits.
I'm in good spirits. I think Arsenal fans over the last couple of weeks have been very excited, very happy, positive about things that are going on in the club. And after Saturday, it doesn't change for me. I thought, okay, I went up there. Obviously, I went up there and left at about 8:30 in the morning. Got up there. You had that bit of positivity. We were in the car on the way up there thinking, oh, we'll get a result today. Wouldn't it be good? We can't nick something. But deep down, you know, really, you're playing Liverpool. They've won 42 games, unbeaten 42 games.
Who drove up there?
My mate Alex.
Short straw.
Yeah, short straw.
Do you take it in turns, or what's the crack with that?
No, I'll go with all different people. So we'll all go with my dad right. And a couple of friends. But my dad and Guy Andrew, we go with the drive this time.
So you lot on the tins in the car and that?
Yeah. Yeah, so he didn't have a drink all day, but we bought his ticket for him.
Oh, okay. That's fair, right, so compromise.
Yeah, good 30 quid spent.
Yeah.
But no, we're going up there and we think to ourselves, like, closer to the game, you've got the excitement game. Oh, we'll get a result up here. But deep down, we got to know our level. We're going for top four as our target. That is what we want this season. And I know people might laugh, you know, we're going for top four. But that is the way the club are at the moment. That is our target. And you're not going to get top four. You are going to get top four if you go and win games at Anfield. But losing games at Anfield are not going to cost you the top four place. It's a bit of a free game for you.
Yeah, 42 games now unbeaten at Anfield. I mean, it's quite the record. They are a very good side. Of course, you were there live and you were just saying off air about their high press and their attacking prowess when you see it live.
It's just like instinct. Literally, one of the defenders gets that first touch of the ball. It's like triggers. They just go, one goes, and then the next one, they like hunting packs. They really do. They just press so much, they squeeze up, and the space, and then sometimes you just get to a point you've got to kick it out, like just to stop them. And then, I mean, I think Arsenal, I think Emery, with the starting lineup, it was a bold starting lineup. I see people straight away when the lineup come out, people moaning, which I didn't really get.
About who and what?
Lacazette not playing.
I think Emery's in a difficult situation here now, and Arsenal, really, in my opinion, are in a difficult situation because you've got two world-class strikers, yep. You'd say. Aubameyang, certainly. Lacazette, yeah, a world-class striker. So they need to be playing. And because of the system that you play, it's going to be hard. Difficult to integrate them.
Well, games like Liverpool, people say, well, we're not playing three up front, blah, blah. But years gone by, we've gone up to Anfield and we've been walloped. I mean, not just been absolutely walloped.
Well, in the past three times. Seasons now, that's 12-2 on aggregate.
Yeah, so we've been really... But this result, we played, obviously, the four at the back with the three midfielders in the front. It's like Ceballos had like a little role in between the two up front. And we tried playing on the counter. And for 40 minutes of that, it worked. I mean, Leno didn't really make many saves. We didn't have loads of chances and they didn't have loads of chances. But we had two big chances and you've got to take them. And if you don't, with a team like against Liverpool's quality, you are going to get punished. And that's what, in the end, I think happened.
Yeah, you are. We are going to be speaking about certain individuals as the show goes on. David Luiz, I mentioned at the top of the show. Nicola Pepe, we're going to get onto. Nacho, yeah. Monreal, who you mentioned. Matteo Guendouzi, we're going to speak about. Yeah. But you just mentioned Dani Ceballos there, a player that came in and has been very impressive in his opening couple of games. I had a text from an Arsenal mate after the clash on Saturday, and he just said that was a rude awakening for Ceballos.
Yeah, it was. It was a rude awakening for Ceballos, but we need to understand of he's 22 years old, I think 21, 22, whatever it is. It's a big game. I know he got sort of found wanting, but it's a tough game for him to play. He's not going to play the level he does every game. He's not, especially not three games into his Premier League career. You I mean, it was a little bit of a, and I think ever since he put that ball across the box and Mane sort of nicked it, he just didn't really recover from that. And he had a nice few little touches. I was really impressed with Joe Willock again on Saturday. Joe Willock played really well, stood out, sort of, because when Ceballos went off as well, he sort of pushed forward a bit more, and I thought he looked really good, Willock, again. So, and I fair play to Emery for trusting him, because he's still giving him a go. He's started every game for us now.
Yeah. What you don't want, I suppose, in terms of just quickly going back to Ceballos, is that was always the criticism levelled at Mesut Ozil, wasn't it, in these types of games? Yeah. And I know, listen, it's early doors, and when you look at
Danny Ceballos is not on $350,000 a week four years into his Arsenal career. So that's different. And as much as Ceballos wasn't that great, as in his, but he still worked, still pressed, still worked, when he was working, running his cobblers off all across the pitch, you could see it. Maybe St. Ozil doesn't give you is the work rate, but it might give you a bit of quality. But Ozil, I like Mesut Ozil. I do think it's probably now the beginning of the end for him, though. I think he could go this January.
Do you really?
Yeah, I think they could. The mere fact he's not even been in any of the squads yet. I know he's training. He's got the security issues and the personal. I think Arsenal would like to get him off the books.
I think if you maintain the form that you've shown at the start of the season and you're there or thereabouts come January, it shows that you actually can do it without Mesut Ozil, if he's not back in the squad by that time, of course.
But the other side of it is, maybe this is the year that we've got the tools for Mesut Ozil to flourish. Pepe, Aubameyang, Lacazette, Ceballos next to him, sort of little 1-2 moving around. Maybe this could be the year where he really, if he does play, he stands out. It could be the team that we finally need around him. Because when he was at Real Madrid, he was excellent, wasn't he? He had the players in front of him running, and then we signed him, and had Olivier Giroud, who really was a back-to-goal centre-forward, no through ball sort of stuff. So maybe this is the Arsenal team that could be. I know we're going to go on to talk about Pepe in a minute, but with his pace, wow, that is blistering on Saturday.
Well, why not talk about him now, Charlie? Because, yeah, he was good, wasn't he? You just thought, hang on a second, this is the type of player. And you can tell when a player is going to light up the Premier League, because he does things that you haven't seen in a while or ever before. Huh. And when you look at the stats and the fact that he took on Virgil van Dijk.
First one, 50 games.
First one, yeah, 50 games. And the last one was, Mikel Merino, the Newcastle lad who came in from Borussia Dortmund, now at Real Sociedad. Yeah. So, you know, sometimes the stats are skewed. But with Virgil van Dijk, that's a real stat, because this is a player who doesn't get beaten. We do take note of that.
I think they made and you did notice it when he was there and on the telly, but Match of Day obviously picked up on it, saying about Van Dijk, the first couple, Pepe went past him. The next time Pepe got the ball, Van Dijk didn't try and beat him on a foot race. He just sort of stood off, gave him the time, and just showed him back. So that's the respect Van Dijk gave him. And I think that's, unfortunately, I thought Matt played really well for him on Saturday. I think he's a bit underrated for Liverpool, but everyone talks about how good Van Dijk is. I thought he was excellent, Matip, because Aubameyang didn't really get much joy off of him. He played really well. Maybe it might have been hard where they were so isolated up top to put the two strikers, but I just think that with Pepe, his feet, the quickness of him, that one where I think he nicked off Jordan Henderson and Robertson comes, he does his two touch and then in the end put him through. He done that two touch at left to the right and just went, and then hopefully with a little bit more composure, that's 1-0.
Well, he's able to mix it up as well. I think that was something that struck me, was that, yes, he
had a shot
the ball
as well. We don't have people that shoot.
Exactly. And that was really surprising, because he suddenly cut in and unleashed that left footer that was going so close to top bins on the left-hand side.
You know what's embarrassing about that?
Were you on the shot?
On Sky, you can see me. I think it's getting in. I've got my arms in the air.
Do you know what? I was watching and I was trying to figure out who I could see. The only person who I did see, by the way, and whether she'll be listening to this or not, I don't know. And we won't dwell on this one. It's one of those things I hate about modern football, was when Salah scored his second goal.
Everyone with cameras up.
Yes.
I hate it.
And I can't... Listen,
I hate it.
I know that people do it anyway now. People have their cameras out and they don't live in the moment. That's a wider issue about society. At football, it's a joke, but people do it. What I can't understand is the fact that you are filming an opposition player...
I don't get it.
...bear down on your goal. What are you doing?
Well, just going off subject, that was right in front of me. I spoke to the people there. There was four Koreans in front of me. There was a young kid, a female, and two guys. Two of the guys actually had Gerrard shirts on the back, and they had a white T-shirt over it. But you could still see 8 Gerrard on the back. They said they paid £450 outside.
Wow.
And they were in the Arsenal end. Don't know, obviously. But they paid £450 outside. And these two people, the mum and the kid, filmed the whole game on their phone. Got the whole 90 minutes live video on their Facebook and other ones are somewhere else. I said, why are you doing that? It was giving people the ump.
Yeah, Arsenal fans,
it was giving people the ump. There's a few people trying to dig them out, and then Arsenal saying, "No, drop them out." They're like, "I don't know what they've done." Do you know what I mean, and they said that they got a website that this is going back to, and they get thousands of people watching their live stream because it's in the ground.
What, do they get money?
I don't know.
I don't know. Illegal because of Premier League
exactly.
rights.
Exactly. No, but it was.
And secondly, I mean, listen, the fact that it's being streamed back to a site, yes, of course, but this is being streamed around the world, beamed around the world on television.
Yeah.
I would imagine if you're that into the Premier League watch and you live abroad, you watch, you've got the subscriptions anyway.
I don't understand it, but...
I saw that, and I know that this is, and we are going slightly off topic, but this is something that is becoming really wrong.
Here's another one for
football.
You. I'm going to ask you a question, because we had a little disagreement in the ground with someone else. Oxlade-Chamberlain warming up right in front of the Arsenal fans. Half of them are booing him, half of them are clapping him.
Right.
You're not an Arsenal fan, but what's your thoughts on... For me personally, I wouldn't clap when the players left Arsenal. I think he wanted to leave Arsenal. Okay, he'd gone on to better things and won the Champions League, but he left Arsenal because he didn't want to play right midfield. But I wouldn't ever abuse him. I wouldn't clap him. And I thought we had a little bit of a...
I think ultimately, yeah, you're a bit nonplussed with it. This is a player who was brought into the Premier
League. There's people singing his name. I couldn't believe it.
No, that's a bit too far, I suppose you'd say. But then you go into the issue of when players don't celebrate when they score against their former club. Now, I understand that if you do it potentially once, when you are a great, like if Thierry Henry, for example, had come back to Arsenal and scored against Arsenal and he didn't celebrate,
you get that.
However, to continually do it, and if you've played for a club on loan or you've had one season at a club and you don't celebrate scoring for your club and people go, oh, he's showing respect to his old fans.
Celebrate.
What about the respect to your new fans?
Exactly.
The club that are paying your wages and these fans that are coming and singing your name week in, week out. So with Oxlade-Chamberlain, I do think that, listen, Arsenal brought him into the Premier League. He owes Arsene Wenger a debt of gratitude for that. He had some good seasons at Arsenal, did his service, and like you said, ultimately moved on. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. There was no ill feeling in that move.
No.
So, you know, if you want to clap him, fine. Singing his name,
singing his name
and booing him, no.
No, just wrong. Nothing, just... Yeah, it was a bit took my attention at the time. I was a bit sort of anyway. But back to Pepe, I think. I think early signs on Saturday excites me. His pace, just his raw pace. Anyone who's got pace like that is going to cause problems. And when he's doing that against Liverpool, supposedly the best defence in the Premier League, they say Robertson, because he was on the right hand side, so he's up against Robertson and Van Dijk. Really, didn't come over to the other side at all. If you can do that with them two, get his shooting boots in, maybe try and get one on Sunday, announce himself to the Premier League and the Arsenal fans. First start of the Emirates,
Sunday,
hopefully.
I wonder whether we'll talk about that later in the show, just to finish on Pepe.
That could certainly set him up to have a good season.
Absolutely. Should have scored still. He was scoring goal.
He should have scored.
He didn't do what Salah did with his finish, open his body up.
And a couple of times I noticed he didn't have a shot of his right foot once. He kept wanting to put on his left foot. So I hope he doesn't get a bit too predictable that people start realising, show him onto his right, and then he always wants to catch his left.
Well, hopefully he's got the Arjen Robben about him and that he can drop that shoulder and pull it off anyway, even though you know exactly what he's going to do. Now, just a quick reminder to those who do take their phones into football stadiums and they do record things whilst watching the game, put it away. Watch the game. Live for the moment. Right, enough of that for now. We are going to be looking at David Luiz, Matteo Guendouzi, after this on the Arsenal Fan Show on Love Sport.
Love Sport.
This is the Arsenal Fan Show on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, here with Charlie East from Gunnerstown. If you want to join the debate, of course, and discuss whether people should film football matches while they're at the game and actually watch the game through their phone, a bizarre thing to do. However, some do it. If you want to join that discussion, if you've ever told anybody to put their phone away, let us know. Love Sport, 0208 7020 558. You can WhatsApp us on that number as well, or get us on the socials at Love Sport Radio. Now, Charlie, you want to discuss someone that you feel like you're going to get a bit of stick for discussing.
I sent out a tweet yesterday afternoon about a certain player. I was probably a little bit harsh on them because I called them pants.
Oh, that's quite harsh.
I know. And I didn't mean it as that, because he doesn't deserve that sort of criticism. But the abuse I got back, wow.
Was even worse.
I never knew he was so popular.
Okay. The man in question?
Matteo Guendouzi.
Right.
I know he's a kid. And I know he's new to the Premier League and he's young and he has done really well, but I think he slows us down too much. I don't know really what he offers. He doesn't make any assists. He's not your combative defensive midfielder that makes big thundering tackles and leads all that. Doesn't score goals, doesn't have shots. Okay, a lot of sideward passes. Keeps the ball well. But I've probably been a bit harsh on him because he's so young. But I don't want to see him playing as much as he is.
Are you surprised by how much he has played?
Yeah, I am. Lucas Torreira should be starting on Saturday over him. I know Xhaka gets absolutely crucified by Arsenal fans, but we're a different team when he doesn't play defensively. And with him and Guendouzi together, it just does not work. It just doesn't. They're too... Well, not similar, but what Xhaka has got in the locker, which Guendouzi hasn't, is that Xhaka does do a good delivery. So he can find Aubameyang making a run. He does that big switch if you're in a bit of space. He does offer you that. Okay, Xhaka may do that one mistake in a game that everyone latches on to. Sometimes you get punished, sometimes you don't. But he's more of a leader in there. And Guendouzi, I'm not writing Guendouzi. Guendouzi's 20 years old, whatever he is. 19, 20. He's a young kid. But don't put him in there where he's going to get found out and ruined every week. Don't put him in there too much. Do you know what I mean? Put him out a bit. Give him a breather. Let him come on if you... Maybe I'm a bit harsh on him. But no one give me... After I got all that stick, I said, well, tell me, what does he actually do?
So what was the stick you got? Just that you're wrong and...
What game was I watching? I'm an idiot. I got lots of GIFs of SpongeBob SquarePants reading books and talking out of rubbish and things like that. I must have got about 50 messages back absolutely coating me.
All right.
But it is what it is, what I see at the game. And while he can't hit a ball either, which really annoyed me. Three or four times the ball comes up, he doesn't attack the ball and head it out. He lets it hit his head. Maybe because of his hair, I don't know, but it hits his head and goes nowhere. And a couple of times I was like, get rid of it. Like, he was under a bit of pressure.
So my take on this particular topic, and you mentioned Granit Xhaka there as well. My argument with Granit Xhaka since he's joined Arsenal, and I guess from what you're saying with regards to Guendouzi, you could say this as well, is that they are not title-winning midfielders.
No.
They're not players that you think they could spur us on to win a trophy, win a title.
No, definitely not. And the only thing I think Xhaka has in his favour out of the two, he's more experienced and he is a leader in that team. He is. He's captain at the moment. And there's no one else really that you'd have captain over him. You wouldn't.
What's the crack with the captaincy, by the way, while you've mentioned that? Is that still up for grabs? I know that he's generally the captain, but it's still not been named by Unai Emery.
It's not been named officially.
I find this baffling.
This
goes back to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's dealings with Manchester United's penalty takers at the moment, because what you're doing is creating a rod for yourself where people have something they can throw at you.
Yep.
And it's something that you don't need as an extra hassle to be thrown at you. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer just needed to say Marcus Rashford is our penalty taker, job done. Unai Emery just needs a captain. Maybe it's not a big deal, and there are suggestions that...
But there is to fans, though.
Exactly, to fans there is. In the dressing room, people say, captains aren't so much of a big deal, and Gareth Southgate has practised the art of having a number of different captains. It does seem like Harry Kane is going to be the go-to. You need one announced. And Granit Xhaka, whilst he's got the armband, is it that he's having to prove his worth with the armband?
I've heard various people that he's desperate to have the armband, Jack. He wants it. And you go round that dressing room and there's players in there. I don't know who else. I've seen people say, Rob Holding. That's fantasy land. Rob Holding's probably played 20 Premier League games in his career. He can't be captain of Arsenal Football Club. Do you know what I mean? He can't. And as much as it's nice, but you need to be realistic. You need a player in there who's experienced, who's got... 99% of people don't know what people are like on the training ground, don't know what they're like in the dressing room, they don't know the aura they are around the people. Xhaka always comes out, if he makes a mistake, he always comes out and holds his hands up. He always says the right things in the press. I think he's quite a good... Mm-hmm. And I think that's a part of being a captain. It's not just about picking your best player or someone you like. It's about... Football fans don't know who the best leader is. And it does stand up to be counted for. Xhaka gets a lot of stick, and sometimes it is very fair. I get that. I'm not sticking up for Granit Xhaka. He would not start for Manchester United, probably. He probably would at the moment. But
probably would at the moment, yeah.
I mean, he wouldn't start for Man City. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't start for Tottenham. He wouldn't start for Liverpool. He wouldn't. But at the moment, the situation we're in, he's probably the best we've got in that position, unfortunately. Like it or not, he is.
So with regards to that position then in the midfield, and I know that starting lineups chop and change depending on who you're playing, but what would be your perfect
Torreira and Xhaka.
So just
Torreira, yeah. And Xhaka, yeah. Okay. I think you've got a bit of both. I think you've got the energy of Torreira. Torreira is our best at midfielder. And same again, he's not been fit. He played the Copa America in the summer. Got back late fitness. Hasn't really played no pre-season. He come on against Burnley. That's it. So from someone to suddenly say, just start me as Liverpool, no, you've got to know your players. Same again, I know the football fans are very, come on, well, do you know what I mean? But he's not fit. So don't play him against Liverpool, against a team that's going to work you and pressure non-stop. Bring him on as he did. When he brought him on at the end, he gives a bit more of energy. Unfortunately, we're 3-0 down. Hmm. But he gave us that bit of energy in the middle with half hour to go, 20 minutes to go. So he played it well. Hopefully, he's fit enough for Sunday. That's what I'd like to see him be there.
It could well be that Emery, that was the plan all along.
He's just gradually integrating.
Of course, that was almost his coming of age game for Arsenal last season, wasn't it?
With that kick against Spurs.
Just to finish on Guendouzi, I'm just saying, Charlie, but on the stats site, whoscored.com, Matteo Guendouzi is the second highest rated player for Arsenal. Just saying, mate.
Yeah, but what are the stats based on? Please.
Mate, it's one of those ones. Like, the rating is something like 7.29. I don't know.
Granit Xhaka had the most completed pass in the Premier League last year.
Right.
What does that say?
Yeah. Mate, I'm with you. I was just, you know, poking the bear. Speaking of Guendouzi and his hair twin, David Luiz. Now, a few headlines this weekend. Yep. Liability, Luiz. I would imagine a few Chelsea fans have looked at that game and gone, ah, there you go. See, he is a good player, but that's what you get from time to time.
I think let's get it right. I knew that when we signed him.
Yeah.
You knew that when we signed him. Mm-hmm. The whole country knew that when we signed him. You've got David Luiz, Jekyll and Hyde. You've got the fantastic David Luiz. You've got the David Luiz that can maybe have an absolute rick. Apart from the penalty, he done all right. I don't know what he was going on with the penalty, but being there, I didn't have a clue what actually went on. I didn't see it, but obviously you see it, it's a blatant penalty. He just got caught the wrong side of Salah.
Especially with VAR now, you can't do
exactly.
that.
Exactly. And I know he got a lot of stick for the Salah thing, but if he's not already on the yellow card, that don't happen. He goes and he takes Salah out.
Or he stands off. Now, you know what Salah's going
to
do.
Yeah, but I think, yeah, you're right, but I think he got to the point where he was going to clatter him, and then he's realised, crap, I'm on a yellow card here. I better stop. And he stops, and he stops dead. And then Salah flicks it around him. And he sort of lets him spin him. So I think if he's not on a yellow by then, I think he puts him straight into that stand, draw them Liverpool fans, takes the yellow card, and we defend it. Mm. But same again, like, that first half, we tried playing out from the back a lot, which frustrates some.
I've got an issue with this. And I have to say, and listen, we're seeing more and more of it,
of course. Well, this new Premier League, this rule has changed.
It's
made it worse.
There was one particular shot, and I actually grabbed this and we put this out on Twitter, and it was the image of Sokratis right by Bernd Leno on the six-yard box, which is, listen, when you've been watching football for as long as we have done and we're used to that rule, it's so alien to see a player in before he's just seeing him right next to him. And listen, I noticed this last season with Arsenal. We know that's the way they play, but the amount of horizontal passes Bernd Leno and Petr Cech did for a period last season.
Well, Petr Cech can't Arsenal do them. That's one thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And we saw that in the first game of the season, of course, where he nearly put it into his own net. Which was unfair because this was a 30-something year old goalkeeper who was having to learn a whole new skill.
Of course.
It wasn't fair for him. However, there is an element, a real element of danger with this. And we know there's an element of danger, but it's not going to be long before Arsenal get caught out. You can just see it happen. Yeah. Very nearly happened. There was an inch-perfect pass that had it been just slightly off, Liverpool would have been in.
Yeah, and I think the one team you don't want to do it against is Liverpool. Mm. Because of the way they are and how aggressive they are on the press.
Instantly pressing. You saw that at the game at Anfield last season. As soon as Leno passed it out, you saw Mane, you saw Robertson on the front.
I think that's where you look at the David Luiz. Go back to David Luiz situation. Last week, we'd done that against Burnley. And he got the ball. Burnley pressed. Tipped around the top. Danny Ceballos, 8 yards of space. Mm. And we're on the attack. It worked. Didn't get the same time on Saturday. for obvious reasons. Liverpool are a better side. They've probably said, let's lure David Luiz into it, drop off a bit. He can't do that little chip in. So they've probably worked on, they knew that we was going to do that. So we do need to mix it up a bit.
Has Socrates got that in his locker?
That worries me.
That's the problem.
And Bellerin. And Maitland-Niles does.
Yeah.
Maitland-Niles, he's not very... He's all right. Monreal, which we will talk about later on as well, his first touch is absolutely fantastic. Very rarely does he get caught out of it, ever. He gets his touch out, he knows what he's doing. Monreal, be gutted to see him go, to be honest with you. Mm. Which we will go, as we will talk about later on. But Socrates, as you said, he hasn't messed up yet. But he's one of the ones where his touch, you go, oh stop, and he passes it out, and he does worry you sometimes. Mm. He's not young. He's a 30-year-old centre-half. He's not used to doing them passing out from back. He's used to going out winning a header or tackling someone or getting up someone's backside. He's not that sort of defender, is he? You don't see him as a ball-playing centre-half. Mm. So we will probably get caught out of it sooner or later. But every team's doing it now. As you said, this rule now has made... It's made teams think what they're going to do, because everyone seems to be doing it. We don't often get the goal kick now, do you, with... People keep just everyone up to the halfway line. Mm. Arsenal don't do it anymore. I don't think Arsenal have ever done it.
No, absolutely not. And you mentioned Nacho Monreal. We are going to be speaking about him next.
This is Love Sport.
This is Love Sport on the Arsenal Fan Show. Me, Matt Beadle, with Charlie East from Gunnerstown. Now, Charlie, we mentioned Nacho Monreal. He has been the subject of a bid from Real Sociedad. The 33-year-old might be going home.
Mixed feelings, yeah. Mm-hmm. Because Monreal's been at Arsenal for a very long time, signing for Malaga. And to be totally honest with you, he has been nothing but a true professional for Arsenal. Very, very underrated, solid. Of all the years we've had such a terrible defence, he's been one of the ones who could probably stood the test of time, really. Not someone who people have been calling to have out. We look different, he doesn't play. I remember one game he had an absolute nightmare against Everton, and Lukaku absolutely bullied him at Goodison and lost 3-0, I think about 5 years ago. And but no, it's a strange one because he was excellent again on Saturday. Really well. He was really good. And you don't talk... When you never talk about him, means he's not doing nothing wrong. Mm. I mean, you're never in a... I've been doing this show now for a year and a bit. We would never speak about Monreal. Not because... especially with Chris and people like Giles, they like to have and Dave, they like to have a moan about a player if they're not pulling their weight. Monreal's never had that. We've never been labelled as a player that he's not performed or he's let your team down. He's just been a model professional for Arsenal, and it'd be sad to see him go. But I do get it's probably a personal thing for him. He's probably seen us sign Kieran Tierney. We've got Kolasinac. Kolasinac probably as a football club going to be harder to get rid of because we got him as a free transfer. He's probably around the 100 grand mark. Probably going to be harder to sort of move him on. So Arsenal probably looked at, we could probably get an option for Monreal in Spain. Lots of clubs want him because he's a Spanish international. So unfortunately it probably looks like he's going to move on. And I think that's probably Arsenal being loyal to the player, let him go and do his thing, let him choose what club he wants to go to. We'll facilitate this move for you, and then he might just move on. And Arsenal fans, when he actually leaves, you'll see nothing but positive words from Arsenal fans, which is not always the case when a player leaves from Arsenal. He'll be left, he'll be always welcome back. He'll be sort of, yeah, a very liked Arsenal player. He's been a good player. He's been a very good player.
It's a sign, this, isn't it, that we're gradually, slowly but surely, just starting to see some of that Wenger, old guard, just get moved on. Laurent Koscielny's obviously moved on this summer. If Nacho Monreal goes, that's another one. The likes of Carl Jenkinson, that dead wood is just being moved out, and we're seeing Unai Emery's Arsenal now.
It's what we wanted. And I think that's across the board from the top. The mere fact Arsenal board now is now sort of doing that, moving them players out. We've got this structure now, this football operations above the manager, which modern football is all about. And I think it's positive to see. And if reports are right, Arsenal are already sort of getting contracts done with Aubameyang and Lacazette, Guendouzi. I suppose I just sort of slated him, but they're talking about giving a new contract. But what I say is irrelevant. He's a 19-year-old playing every week for Arsenal Football Club. He's probably on a low wage. Could be signing him as a 17, 18 year old kid. Give him a new 5-year contract. Give him his money he's happy with. And obviously, if he does in a couple of years become a world class, we've got a bit of value if we want to sell him or if you want to keep him. Do you know what I mean? We've lost so many players over just bad management of not getting their contracts sorted at the time we should get sorted. You have to be more ruthless and say, well, hold on a second, there's a deal on the table. You either sign it or you go. We'll sell you because you're not going to be on a free transfer. It's just about forward planning. So, but with Monreal, 33 years old, you can't begrudge him a move. He realistically probably thought, well, go on, I'll take this hit and go, and Tierney's going to be... Once Tierney's fit, Kolasinac ain't going to get a game either.
Yeah.
So, and Kolasinac fits into that five. If we go to three to the back and two wing-backs, Kolasinac has got that. So you think you've got Kolasinac as your left wing-back. You go to a four, Tierney. Where does Monreal really fit into then, really, if Tierney's fit? So I do get it. It goes with my blessing. How soon Tierney's back is whether or not it's going to be a mistake or not. Our idea is like to keep him till January, but if Tierney's back next month, it's unfair on Monreal. Stop him getting a move. So,
okay,
it's a strange one.
Before we move on, a favourite Nacho Monreal moment? Scored at Wembley, didn't he?
He scored at Wembley against Man City in semi-final. That was a good one. You know what? He popped up with quite a few goals, you know. But no, the one that was a good moment, that was semi-final. I think it was 1-0 down at the time. And
it was the equaliser,
cross,
yeah.
Cross coming. He came in with a volley at the back post.
Like a wrong right foot,
yeah,
half
was,
volley.
Yeah, that was a good one. That was a good goal. And then we went and beat him extra time with Sanchez. So yeah, that'd be a good one.
Okay.
Good player. Good luck if
a
he
very
goes.
Good player, yes. Good luck to Nacho Monreal if he does go. We might be talking about him again next week because he's decided to stay. Right, next, I'm looking forward to this. We've got Ricky Sachs on the line from The Last Word on Spurs.
Love Sport.
It's the Arsenal Fan Show on Love Sport. Things I feel are about to get a little heated between these four walls because the first North London derby of the season takes place at the Emirates next weekend. And we have got Ricky Sachs from Last Word on Spurs on the line. Ricky, how are you doing?
It's far too early to chat to you in this game. I'm sure I'm trying to get up yesterday, to be honest with you.
That's why I was happy to have you on.
Oh, honestly, I'm sure trying to get up yesterday. You asked me about the North London derby. I'm not ready for this at all. Not ready at all for this.
I know, mate. Sorry. Yeah, we will. Let's quickly touch on the Newcastle game. We'll move on to the North London derby. But I know that Charlie's desperate to talk about it.
I am very much.
Oh, dear. How are you, chaps?
I'm good, mate. How are you, Ricky? Good?
Yeah, not bad. I mean, it would have been better if we got a result yesterday. I still can't believe it, to be honest with you. But, just shows you, know, you can't take anything for granted in football.
I think you're right there. I think this year in particular with the Premier League, I think you're going to see these sort of results all the time, though, you know. Yeah, and you know, yeah. Like people, I mean, I've seen Arsenal people, obviously we were a bit happy about the win against Newcastle and the win against Burnley. People were saying, it was only Newcastle and Burnley. But that yesterday proved that again, an away win anywhere is a good result. And like your result last week at Man City now seems a little bit undone, really, doesn't it?
Oh, 100%, yeah. And listen, to be fair, yesterday we didn't deserve the VAR decision because we were just completely awful on the day and Newcastle fully deserved the 3 points. But it, just in terms of the Arsenal game, we've got so many problems, chaps, you probably are well aware of behind the scenes. You know, at least with Arsenal, you've got a settled squad there to some degree, but with Tottenham, we've got the issues with Yamba Tonga not starting games.
Yeah, what's happening with that?
Tactical. Well, again, we don't know. Mauricio has said that he's picking what he believes to be his best 11, and you know, I'm stunned by that because Yamba Tonga is one of the best defenders, if not in the Premier League, in the whole of Europe. So if he doesn't make your first 11, then that's a massive problem. And defensively, we're all over the place. You know, Damian Sanchez, as much as I think he's to be a top-class defender in time, he's not up to the standard at the moment. And, you know, Yan is a player that's so experienced, so calm, composed in the back four. Really, really concerning that he's not playing at the moment. But I would like to think some logic will come across Mauricio in the next few days where he'll be back in the team for Arsenal. Oh, if he isn't,
I'm sure he will.
Lacazette, Aubameyang, Pepe. My God. Your players will be... they'll be feasting if it carries on the way it is.
You know what worries me, though, Ricky, is that I'm normally going to North London derby with a little bit of worry and doubt, but I'm not this week. I know that sounds really bad.
Really?
I fancy we're gonna really roll you over, and
that worries me.
It does, yeah, it does. I know.
Well, what do you say to that? What do you say to that, Ricky?
Do you know what? I mean, I'll be honest with you. You know, the two teams now, the where it is, it, the results are so pivotal. I know we're only three games in,
but we
saw in the back of last season with the Lloris save, you know, from Aubameyang.
It changes.
That you cannot afford to drop points, even in these two fixtures, because of just how close it's been over the last couple of seasons. You know, the great thing for Spurs is I do expect a reaction. The good news is that window will finally come to a close, the European window, and we know where we will stand. And the great thing about this fixture is that Spurs don't really need to raise the players for it. They expect the performance. In the last couple of seasons going to the Emirates in the Premier League, we haven't got what we've wanted. And therefore, I think, you know, this time around, Maurizio will drill into these players. We've done them over in the Carabao Cup. I know it wasn't the most elite competition to do you over in, but at the same time, you know, that would have hurt you guys to have been knocked out of cup competition by us. Yeah. I think if the players' heads are screwed on, there's absolutely no reason the Spurs have proved it. They've got away to Man City, the toughest ground in the whole of the Premier League, and got a result, albeit due to maybe a fortunate VAR decision. There's absolutely no reason why Spurs can't get a result against Arsenal. If we play to our maximum, 100% we can. My only concern is that we haven't shown, you know, anywhere near the form we're capable of, really, over the last 6 months domestically. We got to a Champions League final, which was, don't get me wrong, a remarkable achievement, but our league form is concerning. And on that basis, Charlie, you know, maybe you're right to be confident about Arsenal, but I have a feeling Spurs will raise themselves.
Did I see a stat today as well? You've not won an away game in the Premier League since January.
Yep, so I haven't won away since January. It's 14 defeats in the last 32 for Maurizio, 3 wins in the last 12 games, which surely means we're going to expect a reaction at the weekend. You know, it's two teams that aren't in the greatest form, not really match fit, match sharp at the moment. New players bedding into new systems. So it's going to be a very, very interesting game. I wouldn't be able to call it, if I'm being honest with you. I still think, you know, for Spurs, I'm expecting a serious reaction here. Really, really am.
You know what I think hinges on it as well? Eriksen. What's happening with him? Because I'm hoping he goes this week as an Arsenal fan.
But do you know what? I mean, it's difficult. Eriksen, he obviously wants to go. Spurs have made it clear that, you know, that they're willing to sell, but the issue at the moment is that there doesn't seem to be any real interested buyers, or maybe not interested buyers in the price range that Spurs are looking for. And the problem we've got now is that this is potentially the last window where Spurs could afford to make the most amount of money on Eriksen. When it comes to January, he's free to talk to other clubs.
Yeah.
So this is a big week for Tottenham and Christian Eriksen. You know, it's the difference I feel between what's been for Spurs a good window and a bad window, because you're letting a player of unbelievable quality go. But at the same time, as you guys know as well, when you've lost players in the past as Arsenal fans when they're top draw, you don't also want to keep players that are unhappy.
No, you
don't want to be around the dressing room. So it's a real catch-22 for Tottenham. If the player doesn't want to be there, then of course I want to see us try and move him on. If the player wants to stay and he's going to get his head down, then of course I want to see Tottenham doing it in their power to keep him. But
what's your gut feeling? What do you think?
I think they may well sell him. I think there will come a late bid, potentially away from Atletico Madrid, possibly, or somewhere overseas.
I think the mere fact he's not started, and that's shown that he's obviously not putting the application in training and so on.
Do you know, though, Charlie, a question, even though he's not started, why is he on the bench? You know, I think you've got to be on the right frame of mind if you're on the bench to be called upon at any moment.
You
so
should
my
be,
concern is that, my concern, if he's on the bench, then he's in the right frame of mind to be involved in the game. And therefore, if he's on the bench, he should be starting, because he's the best creative midfielder at the club. You know, you're crying out for someone to change the game yesterday, and he didn't play that well when he came on. Would it have made a difference if he was on from the start? That's another question. You know, Newcastle are a team that would have known how to deal with Spurs when they're 1-0 up. You know, make it very, very compact, hard to get through. You can maybe argue that obviously was against Eriksen when he came on, the fact that he's looking for that, you know, that eye of a needle ball. But big, big week ahead, and obviously a massive, massive game at the weekend. Massive game.
Ricky, early impressions on Giovanni Lo Celso so far?
Well, do you know what? He's not been fully fit, chaps, to be honest with you. So it's difficult. I can't sit here and tell you 100% that, you know, he's going to be a world-beater or he's looked off the pace, because at the moment he's generally not 100% match fit. He came on yesterday for, what, half an hour? We had a cameo. But we haven't seen enough of him really for me to give you a fair judgment on the player. You know, I think you have to give these guys at least until Christmas. Let him bed in. Let him get a regular run of Premier League games under his belt. Then I can give you a fair judgment.
Lovely. Ricky Sachs, thank you very much for joining us, boss.
Come on, you Gunners.
Thank you, chap.
You had to get that last word in. That was Ricky Sachs from The Last Word on Spurs. And it's interesting that he talked about the behind-the-scenes problems there. There are problems within the fans as well. I have to say, I was on a show yesterday, and we have a screen here with the Twitter feeds coming up live, and a tweet went out from The Last Word on Spurs in association with Love Sport. So it was there and we were all tagged in it. And the back and forth from fans going, no, you're talking rubbish. No, it's terrible at the moment. No, it's not. It's all right. We're going to be okay.
No, and I see last week. I mean, when Tottenham going to a meltdown like this, I love it. I absolutely love it.
Of course you do.
I mean, I was an Arsenal fan. I see a tweet last week, someone comparing Harry Winks to Chevy. Right. They've done this big thing, like, I don't know, but anyway, I just see Harry Winks get absolutely slaughtered last night. And
that's the problem with Twitter.
And then I was like,
hold on
a second, what
about
Chevy? And I put this Chevy picture up. And all the Arsenal fans retweeted it, and Tottenham fans said, we didn't say that.
It's like when you have a Twitter question Q&A, and that is like a hashtag Ask Harry or something, yeah. And you know he's going to get hammered. Don't do that. You know the questions are going to be horrendous.
All from Arsenal fans.
Yeah, all from Arsenal fans. By the way, you mentioned Spurs' away form there. I have to say, top six for Arsenal against big six sides,
yeah,
that's 23 away league matches without a victory.
Glass
houses.
Let's just win at home games. If we win on Sunday, I think we're going to international break. It's a big game for us Sunday. I mean, Liverpool, I said to everyone, I don't care about losing Liverpool. Obviously, I do. But we're not expected to beat them. As Ricky just said there, the games against Arsenal and Tottenham are pivotal. They are. We're not competing against Liverpool this season. We're competing against Tottenham, Chelsea, Man United. And I do think it'll still be them three. And I think Chelsea will still be in the mix. Despite what anyone's saying, I think Chelsea, once they get Rudiger back and they start getting a feel for it, I think they'll be in the mix. United are the ones I think that could fall out of it. I don't know what's going on there. I think they've had a terrible transfer window. I think Harry Maguire is absolutely way overrated. But I think they're the ones that could struggle. I'm not just saying it because you're sitting opposite me, but I think that, I mean, but...
No, of course, no, absolutely.
But the game on Sunday is massive. We've got international break coming next week. If we can win that, 9 points after four, I think we could get Tierney back, Bellerin back. I think we could really kick on.
Yeah, that international break is huge when it gets to this stage because you've just played a handful of games. And you mentioned with Ricky there about massive games so early in the season.
Yeah.
This is a massive game. You looked at last weekend. Chelsea needed a win under Frank Lampard. Only the third game
of
the season.
Imagine,
and they needed a win. You look at Watford now, desperate for a win. Premier League.
We got them the first week back.
Exactly. So Watford really need to get a result before the international break because to come out of the international break and play Arsenal, which you'd imagine Arsenal will win, is going to be very difficult. Yeah. Just going back to the North London derby here, Spurs' record at Arsenal in the Premier League is just horrendous, right? Haven't won since November 2010. We remember what happened on that day.
Header, last minute.
Absolutely.
That's the first time I've ever seen Tottenham beat Arsenal at home, ever.
Really?
That's the first time. I remember going home, cried.
2-0 up, right?
Yeah, I cried. I went home, just got there, and I didn't go out.
You cried?
I didn't cry. I nearly cried. You know what hurt more? The 4-all. Remember the 4-all when Aaron Lennon scored the 94th minute?
I do, yeah.
That hurt
more. Luka Modric and Jermaine Genius scored.
4-2 up, going into 90th minute.
Oh, that was buzzing. We're buzzing. The good boy Bentley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, I hate Tottenham. I do.
Sorry.
That's a bad word.
The most... if you could ever pick any sentence that you might hear as a cliche on the Arsenal fan show on Love Sport, just randomly out of nowhere, that's like your Tourette's go. That's like Arsenal Tourette's. Oh, I hate Tottenham.
When Sunday comes around, it means so much to me and every other Arsenal fan. And the atmosphere in the ground, I know we get a lot of stick about, there is not a better atmosphere than the North London derby. I'm telling you, home and away, them two grounds, and it is a hatred. It is. I know you laugh, but it is a hatred. And what's made it worse now is that Tottenham, we've always been ahead of Tottenham. We've won things and they've always been our shadow. And if I'm honest, the last couple of years, they've gone above us. They did. They've gone above us. If they'd have won that Champions League final, I wouldn't be here now. I can assure you now, I'll be living somewhere in Eastern Europe or something. I'd have disappeared.
But this is what we live for, right? This is why we are football fans. And people can say, oh, you're so bothered about other teams. But that's why you're
the
there.
Stick, you're Tottenham mates.
It's tribalism.
Like I won't talk to my Tottenham friends this week. I will not talk to them this week.
Really?
I won't.
Ever spilled over into something that's not pleasant?
At times, yeah.
It can. We've all got groups of mates and suddenly a message comes on a group and you go, oh, that's pushed it a bit
I've
far.
I've left WhatsApp group
I bet there are so many people out there who have left
WhatsApp groups. That's the biggest bite, isn't it? You leave your WhatsApp group and you get all your messages.
Deleting numbers.
Block someone.
I've actually got an Arsenal mate who, when Spurs were in the Champions League, I think for the first time, and they went away to Inter Milan at the San Siro. It was the one where they lost 4-3 to Inter Milan, and Inter went like 4-0 up inside the first half, and my Arsenal mate absolutely gave them pelters because they'd gone out to Milan, the two of them, a wonderful occasion, and they both deleted his number. Of course, Spurs came back to it. Gareth Bale got a hat trick that day. His coming of age game really for Spurs, but yeah, it's beautiful. That's what we live for in football.
And that is, and you know what? People say football, oh, it's only a game. I can assure you, if we lose on Sunday, I will be the most miserable man in 2 weeks after that. It will. And people around you go, people know. I've got people I work with, family, friends. They root Arsenal just because of the mood I'll be in afterwards.
Now, we love a quiz on this show, mate. I like to quiz you from time to time because your Arsenal knowledge is, of course, very good. Now, the North London derby, we spoke about that 2010 game.
Yeah.
The other defeat at Arsenal for Spurs in the Premier League.
Oh.
There's only been two, I believe. The first one was in.
Oh, my God. I'm going to have a guess at 95.
You're very close.
Kingsman.
It was the inaugural Premier League season, so 92-93, when Arsenal were, of course, in the what was the Coca-Cola Cup and you were going to play the FA Cup final. It was on the final day of the season.
Was it
really? Spurs-Arsenal. Or Arsenal-Spurs,
I was 4 or 5. 11th,
all right, there you go.
I was 4 years old.
11th of May, right, 1993. Paul Dickoff scored, but Spurs won 3-1. Now, I like to think I know a fair bit about 90s football. It's kind of my area of expertise.
Chris Armstrong.
Teddy Sheringham scored.
Yeah.
And then there were two goals from a man named John Hendry. Not the John Hendry that played for Barnsley and Middlesbrough and all those different clubs. John Hendry.
Never heard of him.
Bagged a brace. Another jock. So the same as Paul Dickoff, but scored twice. Also scored against Man United on like the final day of the previous season. Incredible.
Sorry, John Hendry. But a typical Tottenham player, nobody.
Right, we are nearly at the end of the Arsenal fan show on Love Sport. Charlie, we've got to do a prediction.
3-1 to the Arsenal.
3-1.
Yeah. Harry Kane will score a penalty, like he does every year.
Right.
And we will win 3-1. Lacazette will come back, fire him with a goal. Aubameyang will score and Pepe get one at the end. Catch him on the counter.
Oh, nice, nice. Aubameyang, by the way, not the best record against top six sides either.
He scored two against Tottenham last year.
He did score two against Tottenham, but that's just three goals. They were two of three scored against top six in 14 games. Of course, he bullies the littler boys.
That's all right. He scored two against Tottenham.
That's all that matters.
They're little boys. Come on, you Gunners.
Okay, we are looking forward to Arsenal Spurs next week. We will be back on the Arsenal Fan Show to talk all about it next Monday at 7 p.m. We'll see you then.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.